Welcome to the Women in Product podcast. I'm Elizabeth Ames. Over the next few months, we'll be sharing a special series on AI and product. In this series, we're going to take a deep dive into how AI is changing product management. We'll explore the exciting product opportunities and challenges that come with it. Join us as we chat with industry experts and uncover the latest trends, strategies, and innovations that'll keep you and your products one step ahead. In this episode in our series on AI, we'll be talking with Miriam Ashouri. Miriam is the head of product at IBM for WatsonX.ai and WatsonX Foundation Models, bringing generative AI to enterprise customers. This is the second of several case studies we are sharing as a part of this series on developing products using AI. We believe that these case studies will help listeners see a range of solutions, team configurations, and ways of working collaboratively to solve complex problems using AI. Prior to joining IBM in 2021, Miriam was head of engineering, bikes, and scooters at Lyft. She has a Master's of Science degree in Artificial Intelligence from the University of Tehran and a PhD in Systems Design Engineering from the University of Waterloo. Rashmi Ramesh, the creator and host of our Path to CPO podcast series, interviewed Miriam. Rashmi is a seasoned professional in product management and has held leadership roles across public companies and startups in the enterprise space. She holds an MBA from Wharton. I'll let Rashmi take it from here.
Thank you so much for your time, Miriam. And we are very excited to have you here at the Women in Product, and welcome.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's first get started with your background, right? So it's always fascinating to talk to other product leaders and executives as to how they got into the world of product management. Tell us a bit about your background and how you landed in product management and what have been some of your pivotal points.
Well, I have an interdisciplinary background in software, AI, engineering, and I would say product management. So I see these four, like engineering, design, research, and product management, as being the four pillars to be successful as a product management. In particular for AI and designing AI systems, it's important to understand technically what's going on in terms of AI. So I'm a trained software engineer that got into AI. I have a couple of master's degrees in AI. I've been working in AI for 20 years. For my PhD, I switched a little bit. I switched to human-computer interaction because I was interested in interacting with AI, the human aspects of AI versus just AIs on the paper at the time. And then pretty much since then, I've been working in the design and development of AI systems over the past 15 to 20 years. As a design manager, as a head of engineering for some of the consumer solutions out there, and currently as the head of product for WatsonX.ai.
I love what you said about the fourth pillar of this, coming from a core product management background. You know, you have the engineering, you have the design, and you have the product, but now you also have the AI and research part, especially if you're working on AI products. Loved how you brought the fourth pillar into this. And yeah, our goal today is to talk about WatsonX and your role at IBM. Why don't you tell us a bit about your role there and how's your team involved with the different initiatives from a WatsonX perspective?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. You know, WatsonX is the core AI platform, data and AI platform that IBM is offering to our customers. When it comes to WatsonX, there are really three components and pillars to WatsonX. The first one is WatsonX.ai, and that's your studio to train, deploy, and tune AI models. If you think of AI, bringing AI to your applications, you really need two ingredients for success. One is your models, and the second one is tooling that is enabling you to create values on the top of those models. WatsonX.ai is giving you both of them, a collection of the models, as well as the tooling and capabilities to build value on top of them. As the other pillars, the second one is what's next, the data. You can think of the repository for AI, where the data lives. And the third one is what's next, that governance is the governing the whole life cycle. You know, there are lots of limitations associated, at least with Gen AI, that we are all well aware of. So it's extremely important to make sure that we have a solid story end to end in terms of governing the life cycle of this model. So that's how these three components of what's next are coming together. My responsibility falls into whatsonx.ai. I'm the head of product for whatsonx.ai and basically living and breathing Gen AI recently, in addition to the traditional AI platform that we are carrying forward.
That's awesome. And tell us a bit more about how the product teams have been structured at a high level, you know, given whatsonx is comprised of these three core areas with respect to the AI, the governance, and the data part of it.
Yeah, I want to go back to my comment at the beginning on the interdisciplinary part and the four essential pillars of a product team. In particular, in AI, the research part of that is extremely important because we are relying on the innovation and the state of the art performance to bring to product. So the breakdown of our product team is really four in a box, as design, engineering, product management, and researchers all working together hands in hands to figure out, one, where the market is going, two, what are the customer problem that we are trying to solve, three, working with research to figure out what is the edge state-of-the-art technology that we can bring to the product, and working with engineering to actually execute on that and deliver that to the market. And product is really the glue that sits in the middle. And that's why it's essential for them to have a very good understanding of all these. I don't know if I mentioned design. Design is part of the picture too. All this together to deliver what's needed in terms of what the priorities are, what is the right problem to solve, what is the high return on investment items that we need to prioritize, and if the technology that is coming from research is ready for prime time or is it at exploration phase. So these are all major decisions that we are relying on our product management in the new world to make those calls and move forward.
That's great. And I think we would love to add some more color to it by probably looking at a few examples there. Can you walk us through a specific use case or an example of how the whatsonx.ai, which is your core focus, has actually been used to solve a business challenge?
Yeah, so you know, AI is not limited to Gen AI, but there has been recently lots of excitement around Gen AI. So I for that reason, let's pick a use case from Gen AI side of the world. If you look into Gen AI, obviously these models have been used for a set of top popular tasks for generative AI, including summarization, content generation, classification, information and extractions, and content-grounded Q&A, question and answering. Out of these use cases, the most popular one that we see enterprises are almost all of them are going after is Q&A and content-grounded question and answering. That's the case that, like, we've been always have assistants, AI assistants, asking questions, rule-based technologies, and all those that we've been exploring with. But with Gen AI, we have an opportunity to have better experience for our customers and increase the time to value on every single conversations that is happening through those. So one example that I like to call out is one financial institution, South American financial institutions, with more than 7 million members, came to us. They've been actively looking into using the technology, obviously including Gen AI, to seek improving the customer service and member experience for their members. If you think about the customer experience as it looks like today in most of the enterprises, it includes a set of representatives that are sitting between the company and the customers to resolve their issues and questions and queries. These representatives rely on a digital assistant to compile information for them so they can convey to the customers. However, they often need to escalate a query to a product specialist to get the response because most of them are not that straightforward. So you can think of the wait time, the loss of the customer in the system, in the cycle, and what can potentially go wrong in that situation. So they came to us, we partnered with them and defined a POC proof of concept over 3 weeks to put together a new assistant that comprised IBM Watson X.AI as the core provider of the models and the tooling for Gen AI, with Watson X Assistant, which was covering the assistant conversational AI part of it, and Watson X Discovery. Watson Discovery is really think of document understanding, going through searching, looking for, retrieving the answers to the questions. And we put that together in a way that now any questions in natural language could be submitted to the system, and the relevant information related to that could be retrieved from the existing document, and the whole respond could be packaged in a natural language way, presented to our representatives. So instead of that cycle of escalation to product specialist to figure out what to do, now suddenly the answer is coming in front of them and they can just look through and validate if that sounds right with citations to where it's coming from and convey it to the customer. So as a result of that, we developed this POC, we put it out for 20 days as a pilot to see how is changing the experience of people and what are some of the potential impacts of this new assistant. And we saw a 10 to 12% improvement in retention when it comes to their member experience. We saw a 1% improvement in net promotion net promoter score, and we saw an 8% decrease in abandonment of support calls due to wait time. So it impacted the wait time big time, and all was just 3 weeks of running a POC. That shows why so many customers are interested in bringing AI and Gen AI in particular to customer care to help their agents and empower them with the information that they need to convey to customers. And this is a very good also example of productivity enhancement for our human agents. We are not talking about replacing them with AI. We are talking about enabling them to deliver better results in a timely manner.
That's a great one from a customer care example perspective. Did you have situations where you and your team thought, I don't think this is an AI use case as such. Maybe it's just a rules-based engine is probably good enough for you. Do you have any such conversations where you actually differentiate between when AI and Gen AI could be used versus I think you are overkilling your system with machine learning, perhaps?
A lot. Several. Obviously, Gen AI is not well suited for every single use case. And unfortunately, the market impression for most of the situation is, hey, we can apply Gen AI to every single thing. And for many of those situations, it's an overkill and it's not the right application for that. So it's important to work with the customer to make sure the use case is the right one. As I mentioned before, the top five use cases that we focus on Gen AI are classification, summarization, content generation, Q&A, and information extraction. So anything within that context, like if it's in sales and marketing, generating emails, that falls under content generation. If it's customer service, retrieving information, formulating an answer, it falls under content generation plus Q&A. So these are the use cases that Gen AI is well suited. But at the same time, AI is not limited to Gen AI. Rule-based, you mentioned, simulations is another big one that like for 30 years, we've been using them, right? So these are good examples, or even traditional ML. There is still like most of the use cases are still heavily driven. All the predictions that are happening in every day, like when you use your rideshare app is not necessarily using Gen AI behind the scene. That's prediction. That's pure right. prediction that is using traditional ML. And we are interacting with that in every day. So it's extremely important to have a very good understanding of what are the different use cases that are applicable for what technique. And when the problem comes to us, instead of jumping on a solution of bringing the shiny thing in, asking the question of what is the right answer here. Even though like there might be a back and forth with customers to convince them that that's not the right approach, but the right thing is really looking into all the aspects of Gen AI and AI and Gen AI versus just jumping into, hey, bring the shiny foundation models and let's move forward, infuse it with Gen AI and see what happens.
Yeah, that's very well said. Do you have an example in that sense where you actually kind of said, hey, I don't think Gen AI is the solution for you right now, per se?
Well, here is the thing. Most of the time when we have a conversation with the customers, there are the solution is really a hybrid of multiple. So when we look into the use case that they bring in, the problem that they bring in, we are like, hey, this part of that is not Gen AI. It's traditional ML. Mm. We've been working on it for years. Let's just focus on the part that is unknown to you guys to help you figure out how it can help you, because the rest of that is known problem that we have known solution for. One example was this last week, I was talking to a marketing, advertising marketing firm, and they came to me, they wanted to have a marketing platform that covers everything, end-to-end marketing needs, designing the advertising campaign, doing analysis on the top performers on those. And I'm like, we can apply Gen AI, but many of the things that you are talking about in terms of figuring out the effectiveness of a campaign, advertising campaign, is known problem for traditional ML. Mm. And it's pure prediction, demand prediction, and as what if scenarios that we are using for optimizations. It's like, hey, this is the scenario. If this scenario happens, this is the outcome. This is another scenario. And we do some sort of what if scenarios to get the maximum outcome that we want. This is not necessarily Gen AI. Like there is no Gen AI situation in this.
Right.
But obviously, there are Gen AI situations that complements this campaign. It's like, okay, so what wording do you want to send out in the field to maximize the effectiveness of this campaign? Obviously, we can pull in content generation from Gen AI to feed into that pipeline.
That really resonates. And love the way you thought about the hybrid approach a lot of times, right? It's not just one versus the other, but there is a hybrid balance that you probably might need to consider. Love that aspect of this. And how do you think about some of the core competencies that are required for PMs working on a platform a product versus an application that you know is that consumes the platform per se from a WatsonX perspective? How do you think are the or what do you think are the core competencies for the PMs?
The difference is the audience. When you are a PM on a consumer-looking product, your world is driven by customers, users. Mm-hmm. Every day they use that, they provide direct feedback for you, and it's like firsthand getting the feedback from your users. And you potentially are a user of that too. Like your family, your friends are users of that. When it comes to platform, it's a little bit different because the audience for the platform are not necessarily the audience that are using the mm-hmm. assistants that are built on top of this platform. Right. So your requirements are coming from, I would call it a hidden set of users that you need to go and chase and figure out. Requirements are very different. They are less on application type, more on metrics type in terms of like the language, for example, is latency. The language is cost, the language is the throughput versus the consumer-facing product, that the language is the number of writes per day or average daily number of users on the platform, right, on the app. You see the difference? Yeah. So the set of metrics are different, and it tends to be technical. And because it's technical, I would say that a platform PM is expected to have a deeper understanding of software engineering, architecture, what actually takes to get a product, a platform product out there in terms of the non-functional requirements, have a very good understanding and vision of the platform requirements like privacy, security of the data, flexibility in terms of where to deploy it, the consequences to that, all of those, which is way beyond just one single use case that is consumer. My second point is related to this. When it's consumer-based, it's typically one single use case. Like you have a use case and you're delivering on that. When you are on the PM side, a platform side, you are powering up a range of use cases, a wide range of use cases. So the scale of impact can be way more, because whatever you're putting out is going to reach so many other users through all the assistance that are going to be part of that. Power comes with responsibility, right? So the scope of impact is much higher when you're working on platform, but also it requires you to have a way deeper knowledge of what's going on. And the implications of your decisions are going to be way more than just one single use case.
Many of us understand the difference between platform, which is not necessarily customer facing or not, but the way I think you really put the scale of impact from a platform perspective, how you kind of weave that in, I thought was very, very interesting and very well-defined version of what an AI platform is per se. And I loved your hidden set of users approach. I hadn't heard that in a while. So love that aspect. So what do you think personally for you is one of the most interesting aspect of building an AI platform? I know you talked about the scale of impact. Is there anything else that is like you're so fascinated about building an AI platform?
You know, at the end of the day, we want to solve problems. We are problem solvers. And AI is an easy way to solve problems. Like coming from AI background, I'm like, when you put AI into things, obviously it has to justify the ROI. But in most of the use cases, the ROI is positive if AI is applied correctly. So with me and my background, it's like, okay, so we have an opportunity to make difference in the real life of people through AI. And we've been having this opportunity that over years, many years, but now suddenly it's amplified through Gen AI, which I'm super excited about. And I'm personally working on. But why this is important? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's less about revenue targets or like KPIs that are assigned to you, OKRs, whatever you want to call it. It's at the end of the day, the self satisfaction that you get from a product manager in this field. We all know that the life is hard for product managers. The expectations are high. You have to be the expert in the field. You have to work very hard to ensure alignment between all the parties. And it's important to make sure at the end of the day, whatever you deliver, it's connected to a bigger picture than just the job. And for me personally, I've been also seeking that picture. I'm like, okay, so in my current job, if I'm prioritizing this work over everything else, why am I doing it? And seeking answer for that. One example that I want to call out that I feel like it had profound impact on me was a couple months ago for an emergency trip. I had to fly to Paris because one of my family members was in hospital undergoing some surgeries, and I needed to basically jump on the flight and go there. The Paris that I saw in the hospital was very different than the touristy areas of Paris that I go to. So I had a very hard time communicating with the nurses and the physicians in the hospital. You can imagine it's the middle of the night. We are trying to figure out what's going on. And these are medical terms that even I have no idea what they mean. And it's not a situation that I pull up a laptop and I go to a search engine and figure out, okay, what did they say? Let me see what this is, right? So I was in that situation that I'm like, I have no idea what's being said. And it's not even in English. What's going on? And my family member told me, just use the large language models. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm firing up an LLM and I'm asking in my native language, which is Farsi, it's not even English, the term that the doctor said. And I'm like, oh, what is this? Because I don't even know what's the English word of that. And it came back. Obviously, I know that it's not reliable. I know the limitations of these models, but it was a good starting point for me explaining what this is. And I'm like, okay, show me. And it showed me a picture of the body parts with highlighted section that I was referring to in blue. And I'm like, oh, I get it. So in like 2 minutes, it really clarified what was going on. And I felt like this is the impact. At the same time, I was in my own world. I was working very hard on prioritizing multilingual LLMs for my product. And I'm like, this is the solid example of why this is needed and how it's going to solve the problems that people are going to have in the field, not the platform problems. Mm-hmm. This is a use case problem. And it was very rewarding. That was the moment that sealed the deal for me that, see, like whatever we design here, it's not just Gen AI and a platform and model and tooling. It actually can be used in real situation to leave the world a better place. And I think this is essential for all of the PMs to have a very good understanding beyond the OKRs that are assigned to them. Like, what are they looking for and feel like they are part of a bigger mission to solve a problem of the board?
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I think when you personally feel that problem, the problem is even more amplified, I think, at that point, right? So thank you for sharing that. And I know you talked about a lot of interesting things here. One of the things I wanted to touch upon while you're thinking about the PMs and working on the platform, I know we talked about metrics being very different from your daily active users and, you know, how many people on the page and things of that sort, but more around the cost and latency and throughput. How do you kind of measure the success for your PMs who are working on platform products such as whatsnext.ai?
Yeah, just to be clear, we still have daily active users. Platform still has.
Agreed.
It's just a different, like it's not bound to a use case. It's
agreed.
Platform. So back to the success, I would say there are two sets of metrics. One is platform driven, and some of them that we talked about, like latency, throughput and stuff. The second set is, I call them like infused use cases. The use cases that are using and leveraging this platform to solve real problem. And because at the end of the day, if you design a platform that is not adopted, okay, even if it has the best latency of the world, right? It's not really solving a problem. So there is a second set of metrics that we need to follow. And those are driven by outside the core four-in-a-box product management and the partners team. Those are driven by, I would say, the consumer of this platform. They can be another set of products within the company. They can be institutions, clients asking for them to figure out what they want to do. So there is a lot expected in terms of alignment with the consumers of this technology and what they want to achieve through this platform versus just successing. Evaluating what success means within the scope of the product team and what's going on here. Basically, the metrics for all your other AI products that are leveraging your platform should be your metrics to track. That's how I'm seeing. And so lots of alignment. just to wrap up, we need a lot of alignment between external teams that are not even part of the product mm-hmm. team. We need a deeper technical experience and expertise just because of the impact and the scale and the scope of platform versus consumer. And obviously, in this case, we need a very good understanding of both AI and engineering and design because our product management needs to make a call of when a platform technology is mature for GA and when it's not ready yet.
Makes sense. Makes sense. And in this whole process of the platform per se, what does the product development process looks like when you're building an AI platform per se, Mariam?
This is a tough question to answer. The product development cycle. So, you know, this can be talked in different, through different lenses. We can think of that as a new feature delivery. We can think of that as a new product delivery. We can think of that as a feature enhancement. So depending on what that thing is, we may need to deal with that completely different. Like if you are developing a new product to the market, and we went through that with WatsonX.ai, basically in less than 100 days, we put a product out there. Like it was a brand new product using Gen AI technology, and it was like, assemble things together, move fast, and you know, being a company the size of IBM, you can imagine how many existing processes we needed to bypass to get this out of the door. The phase at which we are in is more like new feature delivery and existing feature enhancement, which is because the process is already established. It's an extension to the existing processes. Like it's working. It's just a matter of what efficiencies do we need to explore and implement to give us the agility that we need to compete in the market. So I think it's the answer to that question can go in so many directions, depending on what is the thing that you are planning to deliver to the market.
That makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. And when you look at the platform, especially on the WatsonX.ai, what kind of ethical issues here did you face, and how are you looking to address some of those biases in the system?
Very good question. You know, and I wanna talk through the lens of Gen AI because that's where the excitement is today. Mm-hmm. If you look into Gen AI, we really have two things. We have the models and we have the platform providers that are hosting these models. Mm-hmm. Some of the popular models, you know, they are driven by startups or major companies, but it's just a model. You need a platform provider to offer those. Mm-hmm. So the limitations of this are also coming from two different sources, from the models itself and the platform. When you think of the models, some of the limitations of the foundation models, large language models that we are all well aware of, hallucination, lack of explainability, lack of transparency in terms of how the models were trained, some of the ongoing lawsuits and litigations that are going, these can be all blockers and serious red flags in production. When it comes to platform capabilities, that's where privacy, security, where to deploy, all of this comes in. And there's been a lot of conversation there too. It's like, when I provide the data to the model, what happens to that data? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be used for training that data? Is it going to leave the platform? Is it going to be exposed to some third parties that are like, I'm not in the picture? These are some of the serious problems that like we've been facing and we've been trying to tackle. On the first part, the model side, we were struggling with this lack of transparency in terms of how the model are trained. And if you look into our platform, our models are coming from open source, are coming from third-party providers. But we felt like there is a gap here for a category that we can stand behind and we can have full visibility into how this model was trained. And that was really the trigger for our Grannies collection. Like we went to IBM Research and we say, hey guys, let's start training these models from scratch and let's be very transparent in terms of what went into training those models. And this is a model that we stand behind. This is the model that we've been very transparent and clear about, at least doing our part about what went into those models. On the platform side, we've been also very clear about trace the data. We want to make sure that we can say the data is not leaving the platform. The data is not going anywhere that you don't want it to go, right? And the models are not being trained and exposed to your data for the purpose of training. Like these are statements to make. These have huge consequences in terms of how the models can be adopted in production later. But yes, we all know that there are lots of limitations, both on the platform side and both on the model side. Unfortunately, many of the clients are not aware of that because most of the market is as an exploration phase with Gen AI. When you're exploring, you're looking for a wow factor, you're looking for an aha moment. But as you move to production and scale, the reality kicks in. It's like, they soon realize the path to success is not that straightforward. And that's been the key area that we've been focusing on since the beginning.
That's amazing how you thought about the models part and the platform part and kind of the risks on both sides of it per se that you have to kind of look to. I know the broader Watson Studio has been there since 2011, and I didn't know that Watson was able to beat two of the Jeopardy players who had won before. I learned about it quite recently. So to the point that this actually existed even before ChatGPT was actually released to the public and we saw what happened. So how has that affected the Watson Studio in general, or you know, with the three product launches that you had, from in Watson.ai to data to governance? How is the whole ChatGPT being out there kind of affected the Watson per se?
Well, Watson Studio is still there. It's part of that AI. So what we did was, let's just start with ChatGPT. What ChatGPT did, let's just start before ChatGPT. So Gen AI actually started in 2018. I remember I was playing with the StyleGAN at the time for image generation. Text generation was there. Lots of excitement was there. So that's not a new technology. But what ChatGPT did was they made it accessible for everyone to go and experiment with versus just a niche set of researchers or excited people like me, like to go and get their hands on. And because of that, suddenly we had a huge crowd experimenting and thinking about collaborating about use cases that this can unlock. And I have to acknowledge it had a massive impact to the market and the way of thinking about Gen AI moving forward. So what we did was we actually started with a studio, Watson Studio, the traditional MI. We grabbed all of these capabilities that we had and blended them with the new Gen AI technologies on both the model side and the tooling side that we covered. And we called all of them WatsonX.ai. So Watson Studio is inside .ai. Obviously, we are not using that branding anymore. It's part of .ai.
Right.
But those workloads are still happening. Like there is a very good sizable portion of the market that are still focused on traditional AI and are using our decision optimization, collaboration, auto AI, all of those behind the scene that are still there. Gen AI is just complementing that story. It's the same for .data, Watson that data as the repository for AI, you can use it for both Gen AI and the traditional ML part. It's the same for AI governance and what's next that governance. We've been always having AI governance for traditional AI. It's still the case, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're incorporating them, it's still important to have end-to-end management AI governance of the lifecycle. Gen AI has a major overlap with the traditional AI governance. Many of the bias, for example, bias monitoring, drift, drafting, like monitoring the lineage of who touched the model at what part, they are all coming from traditional ML. Mm. And they are all applicable here to Gen AI. It's like Gen AI, in addition to those, has a set of new limitations like hallucinations or lack of explainability of how it's trained that is it an expansion to the existing one, but they are all there. It's just enabled and enhanced leveraging Gen AI.
Got it. That's really helpful to kind of understand the whole picture. I think you brought out a good point about end-to-end part of it, right? So platform being able to manage this end-to-end versus pieces of information that it can do. And fast forwarding a bit, what excites you most about the potential of Gen AI to transform different industries and sectors?
So historically, with traditional ML, if you needed to bring AI to your app, you needed to go hire a number of data scientists. You needed to go collect a lot of data and then train a document, train a model. And then the day after, if you had a new task, you had to go and start over and create a new model, collect new data, so work with data scientists. The beauty of Gen AI is the lifecycle doesn't actually start with data collection. The lifecycle starts with model. And you grab one of those large foundation models that are already exposed to so much data, and they are already exposing capabilities in terms of a list of downstream use cases. And it can implement a considerable and significant time to value enhancement. This can be mapped to productivity for all of us and whoever that is touching our platform or our products. It can be translated to better quality of service. Customer service is the example that we just talked about. And it's just unlocking a series of use cases that for so many of them, we don't even know what they are. So as businesses are experimenting with this, that collective exploration of what these models can be used for, and at the same time, on the research part, expanding it to different modality, now image, video, audio, speech, combination of them. It's just, I think AI is going to get us to levels that we never dreamed of, like pure sci-fi, and now it's just here. It's for us to... Right. Unlike what are the practical use cases that make sense to bring this technology and just deliver and see the impact to the society.
Yeah, I can totally see the excitement when you're explaining about this. Maybe one final thought, your thoughts on kind of the future of AI and mostly the impact on product management now that we are all product leaders and a lot of executives and people listening to you. What are your thoughts on the future of product management per se?
Yeah, I would break it to two categories, on the providers of AI and on the consumers of AI. If you're a product manager on the consumer side, obviously you can think of using AI to improve your own productivity. You can think of using AI to improve the time value in your product. How can you enhance and infuse your product with AI and think of the novel use cases that are practical to your particular application? If you're on the model provider, sort of the platform provider, AI service provider side of the house, it's extremely important to stay knowledgeable and move forward with the extreme speed of market changes. If you look into Gen AI, it doesn't slow down. Like every 3 months has been a generation. Basically, if you're a product manager, a new announcement that goes out can mess up all your strategy and pricing and packaging and everything. So it's just constant change that the PMs need to be very comfortable with this speed, both technically and also build this, what is the word I'm working for? Like, it's basically a marathon. It's not a milestone, and it doesn't slow down. Like, they need to build this resistance and the energy to keep up with what's going on that I don't necessarily see with this speed of things moving on the consumer side of the house.
That's awesome. Any last thoughts for the folks listening to you, Mariam?
No, this is exciting. Like, there aren't many of us out there being a woman and being a product manager and being at the age of moving and pushing the technology forward to make the world a better place for all of us, for our kids, for our family, for our users, for our businesses. That's where we are. And that's what we are all pushing forward together. It's a team sport, not just product management, with everyone else in the market. And we are doing it, and we have a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. This was very enriching and enlightening to learn from your experience, and hopefully our audience enjoys it as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And thanks also to our partner, Discover, who provides annual support for the work of Women in Product. And thank you to our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review so that others can discover us. Android users, find us on Spotify. Or share this episode with others who you think would find it interesting.